If to be human is to be limited, then the role of caring professions and institutions ought to be aiding people in their struggle with those limits. Most of us don't think about our human limitations until we're confronted with them. If we're lucky, we go for much of our adult lives without that confrontation. It starts slowly. We need reading glasses. We don't recover from physical exertion as quickly as we used to. We start to have some aches and pains we didn't used to have. Decrease in memory and cognitive function begins in our late 40s. If you are not yet experiencing the limitations that come with age, please be aware that you have friends and family who are. If your parents are alive, they are certainly confronting or avoiding the confrontation with their physical limitations. Between the ages of 50 and 65, most of us begin to notice substantial changes to our aging bodies. Author Michael Gurian calls this time the age of transformation. Changes in hormone levels affect both men and women. We recognize more than ever the need to take care of ourselves. Whether you actually retire from work or not, you are eligible to join AARP at the age of 50. Many of us experience the loss of our parents in this window of time. Between the ages of 65 and 80, we begin to experience the world treating us as senior citizens. This is the age of distinction. As we experience feelings of strength and happiness that come with the confidence of age, we also mark the losses of friends and family who pass away. Our skin changes. Our bones become brittle. We are more prone to falls and breaks. Perhaps we lose a spouse. By the time we are 80 or older, we are learning what it is to be an elder. We are likely more sedentary than we'd like to be, not as sturdy on our feet. There is a sense that the body is in need of constant repair. Health concerns take up an undesirable amount of time and energy. And whatever the state of our health, we know that the end of life is coming. Maybe not tomorrow, but eventually. This is the age of completion. Some of us move through these life stages with calm self-awareness. Others of us prefer to pretend nothing is changing. Some of us feel gentle and compassionate toward our changing bodies. Some of us feel angry and resentful. And perhaps what we feel just depends on what day. Author Philip Roth wrote, "Old age isn't a battle. Old age is a massacre." It's a little dramatic, but it certainly captures the struggle many people feel with bodies that no longer behave or perform the way they used to. And it captures some of what it feels like to lose that struggle. The average life expectancy in the United States is 78 years old, and many of us will live well beyond that. Our oldest congregant is 100, approaching 101. Science and medicine are able to keep us alive longer than ever now. It is not especially unusual for us to survive heart attacks and strokes, cancer, broken bones. We have surgeries to fix things that are wrong with us. Organs can be transplanted. Hips and knees can be replaced. We live in extraordinary times. But as we live longer, we are learning that the gifts of medicine have their limits, and that living longer in and of itself isn't necessarily always the highest priority. Surgeon and author Atul Gawande writes movingly about the competing priorities we face as we approach the end of life in his book, Being Mortal. He writes of the end of life not just as the last few weeks or days, but as the last decade or so. Wherever you are on your life's journey today, you will benefit from reading this book. Because if it hasn't happened yet, the day will nevertheless come when you or a loved one or both have some decisions to make. I recommend this book so strongly because I thought I already knew what I needed to know about the end of life. And reading this book still educated me and changed my mind on some things. You understand that as the minister here, it's not unusual for me to talk with people who are making important decisions about their lives as they age. Decisions about where to live, what kind of treatment to receive for illness, what kind of life-sustaining measures to accept or decline. That's part of my work. And as a hospital chaplain, I worked in the intensive care unit where talking with families about end-of-life decisions was daily work. I think, more informed than the average person before I read the book. And it was still eye-opening. The biggest change for me from reading this book is that I no longer think that it is the best solution for an elderly parent to live with his or her child, or even for elderly parents to move somewhere to live closer to adult children. When I was growing up, my maternal grandmother lived with two of her adult children, and my paternal grandmother lived close to her adult children. They were able to drop by every day. So this was the model I witnessed, and I have long considered it ideal. And especially as people age and decline, losing the ability to drive, perhaps needing help to do everyday kinds of activities, it can be a tremendous benefit to live with family nearby. But Gawande writes in detail about how debilitating it can be to give up one's independence in order to live with an adult child. Whether you have elderly parents or you are an elderly parent, you know the struggle, right? When the child is suddenly the one trying to force the parent to take medicine or exercise or eat right, a complete reversal of the dynamic of childhood. It does not feel good to anyone involved. And in fact, studies show that loss of independence can contribute to decline and poor health. The desire that many adult children have to keep their parents close and safe as they face mounting health problems is absolutely understandable. But Gawande points out quite powerfully that almost none of us have any kind of life goal to be kept safe. Or we don't want safety to come at the cost of making our own choices of what to eat and how to spend our day. He writes, "The terror of sickness and old age is not merely the terror of the losses one is forced to endure, but also the terror of isolation. As people become aware of the finitude of their life, they do not ask for much. They do not seek more riches. They do not seek more power. They ask only to be permitted, insofar as possible, to keep shaping the story of their life in the world, to make choices and sustain connections to others according to their own priorities. In modern society, we have come to assume that debility and dependence rule out such autonomy. What I learned was that it is very much possible." End quote. To be clear, there are not easy or obvious answers to the question of where to live as we approach the end of life, particularly as our health begins to decline. For some of us, an assisted living facility may be a good answer. We have many happy congregants in such places. For some of us, staying in our own home may be a good answer, especially if your home can be made to support you as your abilities change, with grab bars, wheelchair ramps, even a lift for a stairway. If you have a community of friends, as many of you have here, it can be very important to remain physically close. The last thing you want to do is to move away from the people you enjoy spending time with, if you can at all help it. So if you are someone who wishes your parents would move closer to you, I invite you to think carefully about what they would have to give up in order to do so. The second significant learning I have from Gawande's book is a better understanding of what healthcare should look like as we get older. Gawande tells the story of a woman named Jean, 85 years old. Jean is fortunate enough to see a geriatric doctor, someone who specializes in patients 65 and older. Geriatric doctors are rare. There are not enough of them to meet demand in our culture, and it is not considered a particularly lucrative area of medicine. So many universities and hospitals are disinterested in supporting geriatric clinics. But our story is about 85-year-old Jean, who gets to see a geriatric doctor, and she tells him she's having some back pain, her arthritis is pretty bad, she has high blood pressure, glaucoma, she started having some bathroom problems, and she has a lung nodule that requires a biopsy. She lives alone and is able to take care of herself. Her son lives nearby and checks on her each day to make sure she's okay. Now, she has a long list of things going wrong with her, and a different doctor might start working through that list of ailments. But Jean is seeing someone who specializes in treating the elderly. The doctor asks her a lot of questions about how she spends her day, and he looks closely at her hands and at her feet. And then he tells her that her greatest danger is not her back pain or her lung nodule, but falling. Each year, about 350,000 Americans fall and break a hip. Of those, 40% end up in a nursing home, and 20% are never able to walk again. The three primary risk factors for falling are poor balance, taking more than four prescription medicines, and muscle weakness. So instead of treating these six things that are going wrong with her, the doctor talks to her about increasing her calorie intake so she can keep her strength up. He looks at her medications and makes a small change to minimize the potential for dehydration, and he refers her to a podiatrist for foot care to help her improve her balance. A year later, Jean was still living comfortably and independently in her home, and she'd not had a single fall. So this is a very different emphasis on healthcare than most of us are accustomed to. Can you imagine going to see a doctor for back pain and getting no help for your back pain? But at Jean's age, being put on pain medication would just put her at a higher risk for falls, and the pain is something she can tolerate and live with. As patients, we need to understand what good healthcare looks like at the age of 85 may be very different from what it looked like when we were younger. The last thing I want to share is a better understanding of our healthcare system and the challenges we face when we enter it. Our healthcare system tends to work with a focus on curing us. That sounds good on the face of it. We'd like to be cured of what ails us, but curing us doesn't always provide us with a good quality of life, especially as our chances of being cured diminish. You heard that already in Jean's story, but it's even more pronounced as our illnesses become more and more serious. This is true at any age. It's hard for us to face that we could be dying. And many of us will choose to continue treatment when it is offered to us, even if the treatment is debilitating itself. Perhaps we discover that treatment brings pain and prolongs suffering. We're not able to be with our loved ones. Decisions become difficult. A significant portion of Gawande's book is spent encouraging physicians to learn how to have difficult conversations with patients. There's a chapter called Hard Conversations. And that same encouragement is meant for patients to learn how to advocate for ourselves. Questions to ask yourself or your loved ones when approaching difficult medical situations. What is your understanding of what is happening to you? What is your fear? What is your goal if your condition worsens? And what trade-offs are you willing to make and not make to try and stop what is happening? An example that comes from this series of questions is a story about a man who enjoys the simple pleasures of eating chocolate ice cream and watching football on television. He feels as long as he can continue to do that, Life is okay. So he conveyed that to his family members, who were then able to make appropriate medical decisions for him. You can see that a big one is being able to eat on his own, to eat chocolate ice cream. That was a deal breaker for him. So this is an incredibly clear set of criteria that was helpful to his family as he underwent surgery to have a tumor removed from his spinal cord. They knew what his concerns about quality of life were. In the book, Gawande writes of the illness and eventual death of his own father. From this series of questions, it became clear that Gawande's father, who was facing quadriplegia, did not want to be in a medical situation that would require 24-hour nursing care with a ventilator and feeding tube. He did not want that. His autonomy and independence were important to him, and they set the parameters for his family to make medical choices for him at the end of life. I've shared a lot from the book with you, not nearly as much as is there. There's so much more. If you've been at all interested in the information, please get a copy of the book and read for yourself. As I said, if these issues don't pertain to you right now, they likely pertain to your family members. Also know that we're going to have a series of workshops on these kinds of topics here at Chalice in March. We're very excited about this, so please read the February newsletter for more information. From aging as a spiritual practice, as we grow older, may we be kind to ourselves. As we grow older, may we accept joy and sorrow. As we grow older, may we be happy and at peace. Amen.